some manufacturers want the U.S. to have more leeway, putting tariffs on imports that undercut American industries. Some farmers in the U.S. want Canada to ease restrictions on dairy products moving across our northern border. Everyone can agree on one thing. The North American Free Trade Agreement is complex with broad implications, and NAFTA hits home. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Wisconsin lost more than 65,000 manufacturing jobs between 1994 and 2016. Lori Wallach has been looking closely at these numbers and what they mean. She's the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch and a native of Wausau. Lori, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, before we dive too deep into NAFTA and the complexities there, can you give us a working knowledge of this treaty? Explain how NAFTA works.
So a lot of people, when they hear trade agreement, think it's about border taxes, tariffs, and that would have been correct up until NAFTA and its global partner, the World Trade Organization. Those agreements actually aren't that much about trade. They were negotiated in a very closed-door process, and in the United States, there were officially 500 corporate advisors, about 20 labor unions thrown in the mix. And so the agreements ended up effectively becoming almost like a Trojan horse mechanism, where all kinds of other policies got thrown into the brand name free trade agreement. And when it comes to NAFTA, the really big ones were protections for outsourcing jobs. At the heart of NAFTA are investor protections that make it much less risky and also cheaper to outsource jobs to low-wage Mexico. Also in the agreement, unrelated to trade, was a waiver of Buy American and other Buy Local preferences, which, you know, normally would reinvest our tax dollars into buying goods and services for the government that are made in America. So they would create jobs here instead of outsourcing our tax dollars. And then also attached were a variety of rules that limit how much you can inspect imported food and products. There were rules that, for instance, again, not about trading goods, but allowed bigger, longer trucks from Mexico and Canada to have access to our roads without meeting our standards. There were rules that increased medicine prices by extending monopolies for the big pharmaceutical companies, which anyone who has any familiarity with the theory of trade, it's supposed to be competition, not monopoly, that brings down prices. So not surprisingly, the monopolies for the pharmaceutical companies raised prices for medicines. So it was sort of a Christmas tree full of various goodies, some of which had not been able to get through Congress. And then it was branded free trade agreement. And that's, you know, Americans are very pro-trade. And there are a lot of benefits to expanded trade. Well, when it's about trade, there's a big difference between expanded trade or free trade and what's in our trade agreements. And NAFTA was the first one that was like that. Up until then, trade agreements really were about limiting the taxes you can charge on stuff that goes across the border. So the old saying is, up until NAFTA, if you couldn't drop an item on your foot, it wasn't covered by the trade agreement. And all of a sudden, i.e. real goods going across borders. But all of a sudden, NAFTA started setting rules that applied. And by the way NAFTA works is it has a clause that says each signatory shall conform its domestic laws, regulations, and administrative procedures to the agreement. So the state legislature in Wisconsin, every state legislature, our courts, the U.S. Congress are all bound to operate within these rules.
So what you're saying is that all of these threads and nuances and rules rolled into NAFTA, attached to NAFTA, they weren't necessarily a part of this vision in 1994.
Well, I think they were part of the vision in 1994, but I think that what happened is the good name of trade and the good idea of trade agreements kind of got hijacked. And it's because the process was so closed door. So, of course, many different people have different interests when any piece of legislation is made in Madison, in Washington, D.C., and everyone sort of fights it out. And the process, for instance, in Congress, draft bills come out, and there are moments where it's less than transparent. But as a general matter, you have some idea of what's going on. But with the trade negotiations, these agreements that rewrite wide swaths of our policy are negotiated behind closed doors. Congress has ceded a lot of its authority over the agreements through a process called fast track. So they only get to vote once the damn agreement's signed. And you've got 500 official corporate advisors. If folks are in front of their computers, there's a great infographic that the Washington Post put up, just put closely held secret trade agreement in Washington Post and Google, and you'll get an infographic that charts who the advisors are to the negotiations. So if you can imagine it, you've got Mark Pocan, one of the sort of smartest, most diligent members of Congress,
of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean he's a great guy. Everyone knows he's a really smart cookie. So he has to go over to the Capitol. Go into a secure room. He can only have his staff go with him. He can't send staff over there. And that's how he gets to look at drafts of these negotiations. Public can't see him at all. He has to go hike over to the Capitol and sit in this room. He can't have his cell phone. He can't take notes. And his staff can't go unless he's super, and they have to be security cleared. Meanwhile, these corporate advisors can sit at their desks down in the lobby gulch called K Street in Washington, D.C., and just on their computers, pull up the same thing that a member of Congress can't get at their desk. It's a super uneven system. And it's also how we've gotten into other, you know, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the agreement that couldn't get a majority in Congress. Once it was signed, it's because it was negotiated that way. So NAFTA got hijacked. All these sort of corporate goodies got stuffed into it. And it sort of soured the public on the concept of trade, but it wasn't really that much about trade.
Lori Wallach is with us, and she is the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. We're talking with her on as the fifth round of talks get underway in Mexico City regarding NAFTA. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Lori, President Trump has been one of NAFTA's fiercest critics, calling it on the campaign trail the worst trade deal ever signed by the U.S., insisting it's responsible for destroying America's manufacturing sector. You found through data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that more than 65,000 manufacturing jobs have been lost in Wisconsin between 1994, when NAFTA began, through 2016. Can NAFTA take the full blame there?
Well, that is the net number of job losses. If you look specifically at what at least the U.S. government has certified under one narrow program that's called Trade Adjustment Assistance, it's a program that can give workers a slightly extended unemployment benefit and some retraining if they are certified. You have to apply and you have to prove you lost your job to trade. So more than 79,000 Wisconsin jobs are certified as NAFTA casualties under that program. So the 65,000 means that the job losses plus some gains net out at 65,000. Totally 79,000 people lost their jobs to NAFTA. Now, happily, some other manufacturing jobs got created, but if you want to actually see where those jobs are, if you go to our website, which is tradewatch.org, www.tradewatch.org, there's this very wonderful resource. I am a recovering trade attorney, but I have an economist who has the Trade Data Center. You click on the Trade Data Center, and it brings you to a bunch of great sets of data, and one of those right in the top of that is Trade Adjustment Assistance. And you can open that up, put in your zip code in Wisconsin, and it can pull up the closest TAA certifications to you. You can put in your congressional district, or you can just put in the sector you want to check, and you can look nationwide. But just, you know, once people who are listening will remember Manitowoc, FCG Operations, it was, you know, the ice-making equipment company that in 2006, certified 136 people lost their jobs, certified as a shift of production, outsourced to Mexico. Or laser makers, which was remanufactured toner cartridges, 59 people, shift in production, Eaton Corporation.
So it is very detailed. Lori Wallach stays with us looking at the implications of NAFTA. She's director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Your questions, 800-642-1234. Would you like to see NAFTA renegotiated, or should the U.S. bail out? If you're a farmer, a manufacturer, how do you feel about NAFTA? 800-642-1234. We'll be back after this news update. NAFTA negotiations resume today in Mexico City. This is the fifth round of talks for renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement with our neighbors Mexico and Canada. They're expected to respond to tough demands from the Trump administration, like a five-year sunset clause that would effectively trigger frequent renegotiations of the trade deal. And then there's a contentious U.S.-specific rule for automotive products. Lori Wallach is breaking it down and explaining what the countries are asking for and how it impacts Wisconsin. She's director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch and a Wausau native. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Has NAFTA been good or bad for America? What questions do you have about NAFTA or other trade agreements? 800-642-1234. Let's go to David in Winona. Hi, David.
Yeah, so I'd like to just talk about one thing that always you guys don't talk about much about. If you look at your jeans and your clothing and stuff like that, it is all foreign made. Believe it or not, there's only 2% of our clothing is manufactured here in America. And that might include as a citizen, you're getting it at a cheaper price, but you don't have any manufacturing at all here in America. So what is it doing for our economy?
David, thanks for the call. Let's get Lori there to respond. Manufacturing of clothing, Lori, is scarce in the U.S.
We have lost various sectors, including ones that are considered advanced manufacturing, the manufacturing of the future, aerospace, medical equipment, including, of course, textiles, apparel, and Wisconsin wide swaths of autos and auto parts. And here's what's perverse. The theory of free trade is that we win on the consumer side. So the theory of free trade is imports, which give us all cheaper goods, as Dave the caller said, benefit everyone, and then some people lose their jobs, and the theory says you should compensate them, but in the end, because only some people lose their jobs, but we all get cheaper stuff, the benefit broadly for the society nets out positive. But what's happened is we're outsourcing so many good-paying, higher-end jobs that actually it's no longer true, mathematically, that you have a net benefit. And who found this? No one other than the dean of modern free trade economics, the sort of grandfather of the theory, Paul Samuelson, Professor Paul Samuelson. And he did a famous paper where he basically showed that at this point, the losses in lower wages suffered by everybody, but particularly the 65% of the American workforce that doesn't have a college degree, now outweigh the gains we get in cheaper stuff. And a think tank in Washington called the Center for Economic and Policy Research tried to quantify that to figure out what that loss would be when you actually plug in median wages and you subtract out the benefit, the saving of the cheaper imports. And they found that the median wage worker was now losing about $3,500 a year net. So even with the benefit of the cheaper stuff from the loss in wages. And that is, by the way, why so many Americans are upset about NAFTA. People haven't seen a pay increase in years, and they have a really hard time finding a better paying job, in no small part because of these rigged trade agreements like NAFTA.
And Dia from Burlington called in but couldn't stay with us. She said, do people like their cheap goods in Walmart because that's a result of NAFTA? If we lose this, Dia says, we're going to lose a lot. I have a feeling it will impact particularly low-income people more than we realize. Laura?
Yeah, this is a very important point because this gets to the net benefit. Basically, to be a consumer, you both need to earn money and you need to be able to buy things you can afford. And again, the basic theory of free trade is why for years, for decades, people said that trade liberalization was a net benefit was because although some workers get hurt and it's horrible for them, on net, everyone gets access to cheaper stuff. The problem is, and this goes to that comment, right now, the loss in wages across the economy now outweighs the benefits in the cheaper goods. It's also worth noting, by the way, that there aren't a lot of high tariffs out there left. So since NAFTA went into effect, an agreement called the World Trade Organization went into effect. So the notion that Delia has that the price would suddenly go through the ceiling if NAFTA went away is not true. The global tariff cuts remain in place. So, for instance, before NAFTA, there were 20, 30, 40% tariffs, big taxes on stuff. Right now, if NAFTA went away and we went to the global tariff rates, none of the U.S., Canada, or Mexico has over a 5% average, what's called a trade-weighted tariff, actually what the applied volume of tariff is on the stuff that we trade. So actually the prices wouldn't snap back up. The question is, would we see changes in NAFTA, either ones the administration is proposing or additional ones, help stop the outsourcing of jobs and help lead to higher wages? In my view, we should have a new agreement to replace NAFTA. That's the best outcome, because if we don't raise wages in Mexico, it's going to be a continued pressure to outsource American jobs and workers in Mexico who are working in the exact same companies as U.S. workers are getting paid miserable wages that can't support their families. I mean, the gruesome fact is Mexican manufacturing wages, the median, are now down 9%. Relative to before NAFTA.
Well,
they're cheaper than coastal China now, and the government has suppressed them. And we have to renegotiate an agreement that lets people in Mexico earn a decent wage as well.
Lori, let's help understand here a particular sector. Wisconsin dairy farmers want Canada to loosen restrictions on American dairy products. And earlier this year, we heard about dozens of dairy farms that nearly went belly up when they lost their milk buyer after a trade dispute with Canada. Can you explain what's going on there?
So dairy is one of the few parts of NAFTA that's not totally zero tariffs. The system in Canada is what the U.S. used to have before NAFTA. It's called supply management. So the government, basically working with the dairy farmers, tries to keep a price that is a price that covers the farmers' expenses and leaves them with some profit. And they manage the price by managing the supply. So under NAFTA, the United States has what's called a quota, a certain amount of dairy it can sell to Canada duty-free. The dispute about how different kinds of milk would qualify or not qualify in that quota program was sort of a side argument separate from NAFTA. For Wisconsin dairy farmers, if NAFTA went away, the quota system wouldn't go away.
Uh-huh.
In that already was a feature of a previous agreement, the 1988 U.S.-Canada Free Trade Agreement. So if NAFTA goes away, what happens is that old agreement with Canada goes into effect. And then with respect to Mexico, we would go to those World Trade Organization cut tariffs. So this notion that suddenly prices would zoom, tariffs would escalate, apocalypse, trade war, no.
Well, let's go from dairy farming to Randy, who wants to talk about automotive parts. Randy in Spooner, go ahead.
Yeah, hopefully you can hear me okay.
Yep.
You know, the quality standards that we're getting from aftermarket automotive parts is way below the standard. You know, normally automotive background that I have, and I do a lot of automotive repair myself. I have another job besides that, but the quality standards of parts that we're getting from aftermarket, especially electrical parts, the standards are so low that when you install these in these vehicles, they may last up to 4 months. You may get a year out of them, or they may last a total of hours. And then you're constantly replacing these parts. The problem is they may warranty the part, but the labor costs and everything, you eat that. And so the cost of these aftermarket parts are huge to the normal consumer.
Randy, thanks so much for that. Lori, what about the automotive sector?
Well, when you mentioned that there were proposals underway, because just to jump to what's happening starting tomorrow in Mexico City, interestingly, the guy who's the current top U.S. trade negotiator has, unlike any past top negotiator of a Democratic or Republican president, actually come up with a series of proposals to try and really fix the trade problem with NAFTA. And it's a series of proposals that Democrats and Republicans in Congress, unions, small businesses, consumer groups like mine, we've been demanding for decades. One of them is about autos. And that is the way the trade agreements deal with where those parts come from is it's a technical term called a rule of origin. And it's how much of the value of a good has to come from the NAFTA countries or any of the NAFTA countries to get the benefits of the agreement. And right now, almost half of the product's value can come from China, from Thailand, from someplace outside of the NAFTA zone. What the proposal that was put forward is to get the NAFTA benefits, 85% of the product's value would need to come from Mexico, Canada, or the U.S., and 50%, if it's being exported to the U.S., would have to be U.S. content. And the idea is to put some of that auto supply chain, aftermarket parts, but also the parts that go into the assembly of the new vehicle, to incentivize investment back in the U.S. to actually create auto jobs and auto parts jobs. And it is both a matter of trying to create investment in high-quality, good-paying jobs here, but it's also a matter about quality.
Quality parts.
Randy would be happy if that particular proposal, there are six big proposals that the administration has made to really restructure NAFTA, and one of them is to move that rule up to 85% for total content and 50% U.S. parts. That would help Randy's situation.
There's this real possibility, though, that the U.S. could pull out of NAFTA. There's debate about whether the president alone can decide to get out of it or if Congress needs to sign off on it. And Democratic Congressman Ron Kind from Western Wisconsin said in an interview this week that he believes Congress needs to have a say in whatever happens with NAFTA. Let's listen.
One of my Republican colleagues called me yesterday when I was having the Veterans Forum saying, you know, I think we may have to introduce legislation so Congress has a voice and that we have some input before the president makes such a momentous decision that could have a devastating impact on farmers and manufacturers and our businesses back home, and I agree with him.
What's your read on what Congressman Kind is saying?
Well, Congressman Kind really doesn't. He is one of the very few Democrats who would think about it that way. I mean, he is the guy the Republicans would reach out to try, and the corporations would reach out to try and stop the renegotiation of NAFTA. He opposes a lot of the things that they're proposing to change in NAFTA to stop job outsourcing. He's the guy who sort of leads the pro-corporate trade Democrats. He's got about 20 other Democrats out of the 200 Democrats in Congress that follow him on that. So it wouldn't surprise me if he got in cahoots with some of the Chamber of Commerce right now is looking, the big U.S. Chamber, the big multinational corporations are looking for a Democrat who'd be willing to break with the unions, break with small businesses, and do that kind of a piece of legislation. But actually, just yesterday, I was at a big conference of trade wonks, trade lawyers. It was all the speakers were pro-NAFTA, didn't want to see the agreement end, but there's pretty consistent agreement that there is authority under the Constitution for the president to give notice to get out. NAFTA has a provision that after 6 months of written notice, you can get out. And Congress wrote into the implementing legislation when NAFTA was approved, you know, sort of a living will. It assumes that the president has the authority, and it automatically, if the NAFTA ceases to apply, terminates Congress's approval and gets rid of a bunch of the actual provisions, sort of like a suicide clause of the implementing bill. It just, poof, those provisions automatically go away with respect to any country that's no longer in NAFTA. And also, Congress gave the president authority to just declare the tariffs, for instance, for Canada to the U.S.-Canada agreement and for Mexico to the WTO level. So it's not unusual that Congressman Kind would be in cahoots with the corporations to try and stop fixing NAFTA.
But you said on the outset that this has been largely negotiated behind closed doors. Congress has to go through hoops in order to see what is being negotiated, and that there is an imbalance with transparency. So does he have a point on that?
Well, I think the transparency issue is a very real one, but that's true of all the agreements he's supported. He's actually one of the guys who opposes. There's a big push in Congress, he's on the other side of it, to require the negotiators to post the draft agreement text for the whole public to see. So many scores, dozens of members of Congress sent a letter to the chief trade negotiator saying, you know, this is going to change everyone's lives. If we don't level the playing field, we're going to continue to have incentives to outsource jobs. We should do this in public. I mean, the other countries get to see what we say. The corporations get to see what you say. Why can't the public? And he was one of the few Democrats who didn't want to have that change. It's a valid point. He just is on the other side of changing it.
What has been the response then, before here we head into a news update, what's been the response from chief negotiators about getting NAFTA more out in the open?
Sadly, there is not great enthusiasm about it. And in fact, in the end of the Obama period, they made it even more secret by classifying all the documents. So there's a criminal violation if you leak. And so far, this administration has not been willing to reverse that. And in fact, that's one of the few areas they're just not willing to talk about. I mean, the good news is they have made this proposal to get rid of the main incentive, the main subsidy for job offshoring. The corporations have gone nuts. It's rules that provide special protections if you relocate, so you don't have to buy risk insurance. You can go to a country like Mexico where the courts are a little dodgy. There is a proposal to reverse the ban on Buy America that this administration has put out.
And we're going to pause there here as we go into a news update. Lori Wallach is with us, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Your thoughts on NAFTA, 800-642-1234, and its impact on Wisconsin. Would you like to see NAFTA renegotiated, or should the U.S. pull out of the treaty? What would happen to trade if the U.S. pulls out? If you're a farmer, what's on your mind regarding NAFTA? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Canada sends 75% of its goods exports to the U.S. Canada says NAFTA has been enormously beneficial to the three member nations. U.S. doesn't share this view. As the fifth round of talks get underway in Mexico City, we're discussing the renegotiation of the North American Free Trade Agreement and what it means to Wisconsin. Lori Wallach stays with us. She's director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Your thoughts and questions on NAFTA at 800-642-1234. Has NAFTA been good or bad for America? Should the U.S. pull out of the treaty? 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to George in Boulder Junction. Hi, George.
Hello. I would like to know, it seems as though the lady is suggesting that the theory of comparative advantage by David Ricardo is incorrect. And since that's the basic premise of every economics textbook, I would like to know what is the basis for this theoretical revolution, or, I mean, there's a, you know, she's suggesting a basic change here. And so I wanted to know when the study of Samuelson was done or where it was done, or does she agree with Ricardo's theory of comparative advantage?
Lori.
Good question. So the theory of comparative advantage is alive and well. Professor Samuelson's study, which was published in a technical journal called the Journal of Comparative Economics, a scholarly journal, was applying the current data under the current trade agreement rules to the theory. And what he found is the current trends, and this gets to what's in the trade agreements, which I want to circle back to, the current trends of how the global economy is working practically, not how it's supposed to, but practically. When you apply the data, he found that starting in the early 2000s, the theory no longer pans out the way it should, which is to say the losses as we offshore, outsource, higher-end jobs, the losses in wages are now outweighing the fact we get cheaper stuff. So what that goes to is where we had left off before the news break, which is what are the rules? It's a big gap between George, what George described, which is the theory of free trade, which can work, and what's in these trade agreements. So as Kate, you point out, much too secretively, the negotiations are proceeding to try and get some of the things that have distorted what should be the benefits of the theory of comparative advantage in free trade relative to the various thumbs on the scale, the manipulations that are in the agreement. So to some degree, the way to think about what they're trying to do is they're trying to whack out the incentives for outsourcing, the special protections for investors, the ban on Buy America procurement, so we can reinvest our tax dollars in buying American stuff, not outsource those. The increasing the rule of what counts as a NAFTA good up to 85%. They're trying to get rid of the thumb on the scale stuff, but they're keeping, George, the zero tariffs. They're trying to actually get it back to being about trade and get rid of the protectionism, really, that got glued onto what was normal trade stuff, tariff cuts. And the one piece that's still missing that's going to be kind of the deciding factor is if, in addition to the things that are the things that shouldn't have been in that are taking out, if they add the thing that's missing. And that is some floor of labor and environmental standards so that the competition is done on the basis of some floor of decency. Obviously, in Mexico, we're right now guys working in the Goodyear plant who are making the same tires as folks up in upstate New York. The upstate New York guys are steelworker represented. They get $27 an hour. The same guys are making the same tires at the same plant, fancy new plant in Mexico, just opened, are making $1.88 an hour. Same product they're making. There has to be some closing of that gap. Those guys in Mexico and gals are not going to make $27 overnight. But for North America to be a prosperous, more equal, and also more resilient manufacturing hub, but also a place where working people's lives are good, that their wages are fair, we need to add to NAFTA the environmental and labor rights that exist in international law, and make sure there's swift enforcement of them, and basically end what is called the El Pacto system in Mexico, where the government and the companies set a wage. You can't negotiate for it. It isn't set by the market. And as a result, you've had wages decline in NAFTA, despite all this new investment and new jobs there.
George, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, the obvious question is, how does one know whether trade is wise? So I'll give you a simple example. The theory that she's proposing is, or it seems to reflect the idea, that we should have as much domestic-made content as possible to preserve jobs. So, obviously, Wisconsin doesn't want to have Wisconsin-grown bananas. They would be extremely expensive. So, in a case like that, it would be absurd for us to grow our own bananas in northern Wisconsin in greenhouses. So I'd like to know, when is it appropriate to have trade, and when do we gain, and when do we not gain? And how do we know if this is all just her opinion?
George, thanks so much for calling in. Lori, go ahead.
Well, it's not a matter of making everything in Wisconsin or in the U.S. The question, the thing I was describing, which I think George misunderstood slightly, is the rule of origin, the domestic content requirement. That's for a product to get the special benefits of the trade agreement. So the reason you do that is you set rules under the agreement. Hopefully going forward, we get a new NAFTA deal that actually gets rid of the rigged corporate parts and adds in the basic labor and environmental standards. And you basically, in deciding what products get to get the special access, the zero tax access of NAFTA, you want the products that meet those rules, the companies that meet those rules, to be the ones who benefit. So the rule of origin has to do with who gets the special tax cuts, and it should be the companies and the countries that meet those rules.
And so we can fit in another call here, let's get John to come in Appleton. Hi, John, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, and appreciate the discussion. So 2 points. One is, I've learned that Mexican corn, or the corn that was, that's after and after, the corn that was sold in Mexico was USA grown and highly subsidized, so that it was cheaper, actually, for Mexicans to buy our highly subsidized corn than grow their own. Hence, maybe part of the movement of workers from Mexico, Central America, to our country. The other point I wanted to bring up was NAFTA devastated unions, and you just touched on that a little bit ago. So I would, since I'm a union supporter, would want unionized entities to get, some favoring and some. Being able to play on the same economic playground that non-union companies currently enjoy.
John, thanks. Lori, go ahead.
Well, the unions in Mexico, Canada, and the United States are working together to try and get this NAFTA renegotiated so we can get the kind of benefits of free trade that George is describing, but also have the agreement be fair for workers so we have higher wages. And really, and this is sort of an apt place to end, what's at stake with this fifth round of negotiations is the U.S. has actually put out proposals that have been more favored by unions and Democrats in Congress and consumer groups like ours than, for instance, the big businesses or the Republicans in Congress. And right now, Canada and Mexico are kind of following the U.S. big businesses who are saying, just ignore that. We'll hope it goes away. And the thing that worries me is, if Mexico and Canada don't engage in these reforms, you could see a scenario where the talks just deadlock. And we really do need a new agreement. There are benefits to get from expanded trade. We need the right rules. I mean, certainly having no NAFTA is better than this NAFTA, given almost 1 million American workers have been certified as losing their jobs to NAFTA. However, the real goal is to get a new agreement that gets the benefits of expanded trade that George described
and
without,
Lori,
the baggage.
What about renegotiating it more often? Would that help circumstances at all?
I actually think that provision that the U.S. has put forward of reviewing the agreement and having it's been called a sunset clause, but literally what it requires is every 5 years, the heads of trade in each country need to get together, review the outcome, see if it measured up to what they had in mind, and then before the end of the 5 years, try and change anything they think needs changing. And then at the end of the 5 years, they re-up either the same old rules if it worked out, or the changed rules if it didn't. I mean, I guess if they couldn't fix it, if it wasn't working the way they wanted and they couldn't fix it, they could let it go.
So you tweak and tinker
really
more often.
Smart. I think that's really smart. Because we've had 23 years. NAFTA has a really bad name now. I mean, if you look, you know, we went from a very small trade deficit with Mexico and a surplus. We sold more stuff to Mexico than we bought before NAFTA. Last year, we had a $173 billion deficit. It did not have to get that bad.
So, as you,
we could have fixed it.
And in the last few seconds here, Lori, as you watch the proceedings in Mexico City, what are you watching for here as the fifth round of talks get underway?
Well, I am cheering on the process. Like, I will put on my cheddar wedge sitting here in my office in Washington, D.C. Cheer it on like a Packers Sunday, because I'm hoping that Mexico and Canada engage with the U.S. proposals to transform the rules of NAFTA. I hope that the U.S. government also comes forward with a proposal on labor and environmental standards to try and raise wages. There is a way to redo this agreement and create a model of how to do trade agreements right. And I'm hoping everyone actually comes to the table and digs into that work. But we're going to have to watch. We're going to have to watch that closely. It's a tenuous situation.
Well, Lori, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Lori Wallach is the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, and she is a native of Wausau. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Nyasia Ellison. We had technical direction from executive producer Michelle Johnson. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this discussion on NAFTA is found on the Ideas Network. Tomorrow at this time, we'll discuss the beginning of the Christmas shopping season. We'll examine people's attitudes towards stores being open on Thanksgiving, Black Friday deals starting this Monday, and much more. That's coming up tomorrow after 7 here on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for listening.